pleasure to be with you here in the Bethlehem Church. I'm going to spend a few moments this evening speaking about the health message as it relates to last day events. Now, we're told in the spirit of prophecy that in the last days, there's going to be plagues and judgments, and that these are already falling upon the despisers of the grace of God. And I'm reading from Evangelism, page 31. The calamities by land and sea, the unsettled state of society, the alarms of war are portentous. They forecast approaching events of the greatest magnitude. So here we have a prophecy of events coming in the future. And elsewhere in the spirit of prophecy, we have a number of other statements, such as, we who know the truth should be preparing for what is soon to break upon the world as an overwhelming surprise. Fearful and awful trials await the people of God. A storm is coming relentless in its fury. And finally, from Second Selected Messages, page 142, the work of the people of God is to prepare for the events of the future which will soon come upon them with blinding force. Events coming upon us with blinding force. Something is just about to happen. Now, how does the health message fit into this? Let's read from Councils on Diets and Foods, page 17. Although health reform is not the third angel's message, it is closely connected with it. Those who proclaim the message should teach health reform also. It is a subject that we must understand in order to be prepared for the events that are close upon us, and it should have a prominent place. So it's a subject that we must understand in order to be prepared for these events that are soon coming. Now, I might ask you, why is it so important that we understand the health message? What difference does it make? Let me read to you another statement from Ministry of Healing, page 128. Whatever injures the health not only lessens physical vigor, but tends to weaken the mental and moral powers. Indulgence in any unhealthful practice makes it more difficult for one to discriminate between right and wrong, and hence more difficult to resist evil. It increases the danger of failure and defeat. Now, in the last days, there's going to be tremendous temptations come to us as a people. And the devil is going to even deceive the very elect, if that were possible. And we're told here that whatever injures the health lessens our ability to discriminate between right and wrong. This is one reason we must understand the health message. And usually when people think of the health message, they think of appetite. They think of diet. Now, diet is only one of the eight basic remedies called natural remedies that we have. And we're going to put the emphasis on diet this weekend, although tomorrow afternoon we'll probably spend more time on diet. But all of them need to be put together. They need to be used together. We don't want to unnecessarily put the emphasis on diet and forget about exercise, and sunlight, and fresh air. But appetite is one of the areas that is probably the most difficult for us to overcome. And possibly one reason why it's so difficult is because it's a socially acceptable sin. It's socially acceptable to sit and overeat at a Sabbath afternoon potluck. It's socially acceptable to eat multiple times a day, a little in between meal snacks. It's socially acceptable to eat the wrong kinds of foods. And this is one of the reasons why it's so hard to overcome appetite. But we must overcome appetite. In fact, we're told in the little book by Ellen White called Sufferings of Christ, page 11, our Redeemer withstood the power of Satan upon this great leading temptation. What is a great leading temptation? Right after that, the indulgence of appetite, which imperils the souls of men. The great leading temptation. So it is something that we need to think about and need to consider, because our health really depends upon what we do, the results of our actions. If we smoke for 30 years, we may end up with a lung cancer, or we may end up with heart disease. Now, is this something that we can say, well, it's just a natural thing that happened? No, it's a direct result of the smoking. You may eat the wrong way and end up with a heart attack. And you say, well, this is the Lord's will that I had the heart attack. Maybe He wanted to tell me something. But it really isn't the Lord's will that His children are sick. That heart attack has come on as a direct violation of the laws of God. Eating the wrong things, possibly eating too often, not exercising, not getting the fresh air and sunlight possibly, too much stress, many other factors could be involved. And we need to understand these things so that we do not have to suffer from heart disease and cancer and strokes and all kinds of other problems. It becomes vitally important to understand these things. And I believe more important as time gets closer and closer to the coming of Christ, because the deceiver is going to be out there deceiving, if it were possible, the very elect. Well, let me ask you a question tonight. Is it possible to break the laws of God? Can you break the laws of God? Well, I'm going to disagree with some of you that it is impossible to break the laws of God. Now bear me out. Can you break the law of gravity? If you jump off of a cliff, what happens? You're going to fall down and break your back. Did you break the law of gravity? It broke you. The law of gravity was not broken. And it's the same way with all of the rest of the laws of God. Whether it's eating the wrong food, it's going to break you. You're going to suffer the consequences for your actions. And that's why God has given us a guideline of 10 commandments and a health message, so that we can see just exactly the way that we should live and how we should live, so that we don't become broken and damaged. Because God doesn't want us broken. We're His children. He loves us. Now, when we break one of those commandments, we start to die. It's very interesting how that just one little disregard of the laws of God, and whether it's the moral law, the Ten Commandments, or the health laws, we reap the consequences in our bodies and we start to die. And as man has continued to degenerate over the thousands of years that we have been here on this planet, our lifespan has become shortened, because of the evil habits that have been carried from generation to generation. And this death that we die is really eternal death if it were not for the sacrifice that Christ made for us. It is a very real thing. We, by our own actions, are going to die, and that death is permanent. It's not an arbitrary thing that God said, oh, you ate that apple, now you've got to die. It's a direct physical thing in our lives. When we break the laws of God, we start to die. We damage our organism, our bodies. And Christ says, my children have made a mistake, and I am going to go and die. They really are entitled to die the second death, eternal death. But I am going to die that death for them, so that they will have a chance for eternal life. And even though they'll die on this earth as a direct result of their bad habits, through Christ we have a chance for eternal life. So, really, the plan of salvation is a real thing. It's just not an arbitrary law that God has set up that you must die if you eat that apple. God doesn't work that way. His laws are real. And they have real consequences. As it says in the scripture, be not deceived, for God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. And directly taken from that in the spirit of prophecy, Counsels on Diets and Foods, page 71. But if he disregards that light and lives in violation of natural law, he must pay the penalty. It's in the same book, page 29. There is no happen so. No chance about this matter. Nature's God will not interfere to preserve men from the consequences of violating nature's law. There is much sterling truth in the adage, every man is the architect of his own fortune. So there's a lot of information that we have that we can use. Sometimes if we disregard the natural laws, and we're going to spend a lot of time discussing these natural laws this weekend, but sometimes when we disregard those natural laws and we get sick, sometimes we ask for prayer and anointing. But sometimes we're not really interested in changing our ways. We want to go on and continue eating the things that we have eaten before that brought us to that place. And from this last statement we just read, nature's God will not interfere to preserve man from the consequences of violating nature's laws. Very important that we understand this. And when we become sick, that's the time to start examining our lives and saying, what have I been doing wrong? What's the matter? Because always we have to reason from cause to effect when we become ill. We're doing something wrong. And Ellen White says, in over 90%, it's sickness is a direct result of our own actions. So there's a lot of good information there that we really need to take heed and start working with. Because lots of times it's easy to say, well, my parents had this problem and I'll probably have this problem. And we live in a degenerate race and my body is degenerate and it's probably going to get sick. And that's just one of the lots of our life here on this planet, is to get sick. But that's not true. God's plan is not to have us sick. And the psalmist says that our bodies are beautifully and wonderfully made. And there is really no reason for us getting sick in the large majority of cases. There is something wrong. Maybe it's too much stress in your life. Maybe it's a number of other things. But somehow you need to sit down with the Lord and get an understanding of what you're doing that is damaging your body. Well, I have another question for you. Could the seven last plagues be brought on as a direct result of violating the natural laws. Well, we don't have a lot of information to answer that question, but I'd like to read you one statement from the book Medical Ministry, page 159. The Lord has given instruction that the gospel is to be carried forward, and the gospel includes health reform in all its phases. Our work is to enlighten the world, for it is blind to the movements which are taking place, preparing the way for the plagues which God will permit to come upon the world. God's faithful watchman must give the warning. Well, I don't think that possibly all the plagues may be a direct result of the bad actions. God may cause some of them, but I think that from this statement here, it does say that the world is blind to the movements which are taking place, preparing the way for the plagues which God will permit to come upon the world. Now, could these things that are happening, could these plagues that are just about to occur, could they involve overpopulation, pollution, poor nutrition, violating all the other laws of God? Could they involve those things? Well, I can tell you tonight that there are many here in this room who would not be here if it were not for some of our miracle drugs, some of our antibiotics. Infectious diseases would have wiped you out. If not you, maybe one of your friends or one of your relatives or neighbors. There are many whose lives are only saved through these miracle drugs, these antibiotics. But what would happen if gradually the bacteria over a period of a few years became more and more resistant to those antibiotics, to where the doctor had no more antibiotics that he could give you if you came down with an infection? That would be a disaster. You say, well, no doubt they'll keep finding new antibiotics, new drugs that will keep the bacteria down where they should be. Well, you may think that, but the people that are up there that are in the know are getting more and more alarmed and more concerned about what is happening. Let me read to you from a medical journal from the Medical Clinics of North America, dated September 1978. All antimicrobial agents so far developed possess the potential to produce adverse reactions in the host. Likewise, the emergence of organisms which are resistant to its antimicrobial effect has plagued every new antibiotic thus far developed. So every new antibiotic seems to be having a problem with resistant bacteria. Now, I like to read a statement from the Medical Tribune dated May 4, 1977, where Dr. Stanley Falkow, professor of microbiology and genetics at the University of Washington School of Medicine, made a statement. All the presently available data strongly suggest that perhaps as soon as the next decade, we are going to see serious antibiotic resistance among all groups of medically important pathogens. So he's saying that we'll probably within the next decade see serious antibiotic resistance. He goes on, it is still too early to say what the final picture will look like, but I, for one, find it very disquieting that the resistance factors have begun penetrating the gram-positive so rapidly. Gram-positives are the streptococcus and staphylococcus germs. You've all heard of those, strep sore throats and strep this and staphylococcal germs. Well, here's Dr. Falkow saying that he's really alarmed that these resistant bacteria are multiplying so rapidly. Well, he goes on saying how that there are certain types of these germs that are developing resistance to multiple antibiotics. You can hit them with all of the most powerful ones, so potent that they are not even used and only in cases of emergencies because they're so toxic. And yet these bacteria are resistant to them using different multiple toxic antibiotics. So from the Medical World News, February 19, 1979, just a couple months ago, I clipped this statement out. Around the world, drug-resistant organisms are increasing in numbers, stealthily but steadily. Time seems to be running out as far as the antibiotics. Well, what do we as Christians need to think when we see things like this happening? Are we to say, well, I guess we'll have to suffer with all those bacterial infections the same way with the general public? We have a more sure word of prophecy. And I'd like to read to you from the Bible Commentary, Volume 7, page 938. We ask to be kept from the pestilence that walketh in darkness, that is stalking with such power through the world. We are then to cooperate with God, observing the laws of health and life. So here it is. If we want to avoid those pestilences, we are then to cooperate with God, observing the laws of health and life. And from the same page, natural means used in accordance with God's will bring about supernatural results. We cannot disregard the laws of nature without disregarding the laws of God. We cannot expect the Lord to work a miracle for us while we neglect the simple remedies He has provided for our use, which aptly and opportunely applied will bring about a miraculous result. The simple remedies. Maybe sometimes they seem too simple to us so that we don't even use them because they're too simple. Like hydrotherapy or sunlight. And we'll speak a little bit about those this evening. One more statement from the Signs of the Times, January 6, 1876. The more simply and naturally we live, the better shall we be able to resist epidemic and disease. The more simply and naturally we live, the more we'll be able to resist those epidemics. And we're overdue for a killer flu coming through this country. In fact, many epidemiologists and health authorities have been expecting every year to have a killer flu that would just wipe out literally millions of people, not only in this country, but around the world. You remember a year or two ago, they had this swine flu they were so worried about? Well, every year they keep looking for this because they're expecting it to come back. To cycle back like it used to be back in the early 1900s when the flus were so terrible. But God's people do not need to worry about killer flus. Do not need to be worried about these other strange, mysterious diseases that seem to be attacking us. Legionnaires' disease and a number of others that seem to be worrying the public health authorities. Well, medical ministry, page 221. And God has pledged himself to keep this human machinery in healthful action if the human agent will obey his laws and cooperate with God. It always comes back to that. God has promised to do this and this and this for us to keep us healthy if the human agent will obey his laws and cooperate with God. And in the scripture, we find that God has promised to take away all sickness from among us and put none of the diseases of the world upon us. But we must follow his commandments and his statutes. Well, I want to spend a little time on diet this evening. Now, as I go along, if you have a question about anything, maybe just write it down or make a little mark or something. And before we end this evening, I'll give you a chance to ask a question. We have a rather small group, and I think that we can ask a few questions this evening if you would like. So if you do have a question, I'm going to talk about a few of the natural remedies. About diet from Councils on Diets and Foods, page 380. Again and again, I have been shown that God is trying to lead us back step by step to his original design that man should subsist upon the natural products of the earth. Now that is God's design and that is God's plan, and he is trying to lead us back step by step towards this simple natural diet. From page 81, the Lord intends to bring his people back to live upon simple fruits, vegetables, and grains. And the key to our health food industry and the type of food we should make our foods out of is found in 7 Testimonies, page 125. He is bringing them back to the diet originally given to man. Their diet is to consist of the foods made from the materials he has provided. Now, what are the materials that he has provided? Well, she answers that the materials principally used in these foods will be fruits and grains and nuts. But various roots will also be used. Other roots include things like carrots and sweet potatoes and regular potatoes and turnips, if you like them, whatever. But these are root vegetables. And they're also included in the diet that God is leading his children back to. And these are the materials that God has provided for our use, to use in combining together to make our food. Now, somehow, the diet that was given to the Seventh-day Adventist Church over 100 years ago was the very diet that I am presenting to you tonight. And that diet was, from 2 Testimonies, page 45, a plain diet, free from spices and flesh meats and grease of all kinds. This was the type of a diet that we were given as a people. Now, the term grease in there certainly did not include things like cream or milk, or it wouldn't include eggs, because Ellen White elsewhere also mentioned that milk and cream could be used in the diet, a little milk and cream to season the vegetables or whatever. But grease is something that was to be eliminated from the diet. Now, in Ellen White's day, the dictionaries all spoke of grease as being any oily, fatty, or unctuous substance. In other words, something that was kind of oily and greasy. This was what we were speaking about. And we'll go into this more tomorrow, but anytime you take something that is fat soluble, that doesn't mix with water, It's not like it comes in nature. There's a difference. Like milk and cream, you can mix those with water, but you can't mix things like margarine or oil or butter. Those you can't mix with water. They are totally alien to nature as far as our diet is concerned, because everything that God gave us to eat is water soluble. Now we'll get into that quite a bit later on, but when we take certain foods, let's look just for a moment at our body's ability to fight off infection. Very important if we're going to fight off killer flus, fight off strep infections. We know that if you use an extract from certain plants, like the corn, if you extract something out of that corn and use it in large quantities in your diet, now we're speaking specifically of corn oil, which is a pure chemical that you've removed from the corn and you've eliminated all the bulk and the fiber and the vitamins and the minerals, and you take this product in your diet, that polyunsaturated fat has a way of getting into your body's immune system, the system that helps you fight disease, and will paralyze that immune system so that it cannot fight those germs like it really should. And I'll spend some more time on that tomorrow afternoon. But we know that other things that are pure and refined will do the same thing. Sugar has the same effect. For every teaspoon of sugar you add to your diet, it'll inhibit your white blood cells from fighting infection. So that if you eat just 1 or 2 teaspoons of sugar in your diet, it doesn't have a large effect, it has a small effect. Maybe the white blood cell is able to, say, engulf and eat up maybe 14 bacteria. But a teaspoon of sugar or two, maybe cut it down to where it'll only be able to engulf maybe 10 or 11. But what happens when you eat something like a milkshake or a banana split where you get maybe 20 or 25 or 30 teaspoons of sugar? Those white blood cells are right down to where they can't even get one bacteria and engulf it and eat it. So these refined foods like sugar and the oils that have had all the bulk and the fiber and the vitamins and the minerals removed from them, they seem to have a specific property of destroying your immune system, your system that helps you fight off infection. So you can see how important it is that we get our food principally from the materials that God has given to us to use. If you need something to sweeten your food with, maybe you could use some dried fruit or dates or raisins or something like that, rather than using so much sugar. And we'll get more into that as the weekend goes along. But I would like to mention to you a little about hydrotherapy, because hydrotherapy is something that is so vitally important for us to understand in the last days. And let me just tell you a brief story so that you will understand why it's so vitally important. There was a woman over in Australia by the name of Elizabeth Kinney. Now, most of you probably know her better by the name Sister Kinney, as all the nurses in the Commonwealth countries are called. They're not Catholics or nuns, but they are just nurses, and they call them Sister. So this nurse started using hydrotherapy and physical therapy to treat infantile paralysis with. Now, infantile paralysis is an infectious disease. It's caused by a virus, germ that gets into your body. But the current treatment of the day was using drugs and surgery and splints and casts to try to keep these people from becoming deformed. Well, Elizabeth Kinney started using hydrotherapy. And the controversy started gaining momentum when the results that she started getting were nothing short of spectacular compared to the results that the physicians were getting in the 1920s and the 1930s. Well, the physicians didn't like it because the general public were becoming more and more enthused about Sister Kinney's treatment for infantile paralysis. All the fomentations and the hydrotherapy and the exercise that Sister Kinney used. In fact, the controversy got so hot that they tried to have her banned for practicing medicine without a license. The controversy boiled all the way over into England, where a royal committee of physicians met and condemned her methods. And another official body got together a few years later and soundly denounced her and condemned her. And in the 1930s, she was rather discouraged, but she kept on. And finally, the controversy boiled all the way over into the United States, where the National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis and the University of Minnesota invited her over to speak, heard her ideas, and decided to try them. And the results they got were astounding. Well, you know, many of the Seventh-day Adventist physicians who were using drugs and surgery and splints and casts to treat their patients with infantile paralysis says, well, Sister Kinney doesn't have anything. We've had that in our books for years. And truly we do. Our red books are just loaded with information about how to use those hot fomentations, those hot packs, and the hot and cold treatments, and the water treatments. And you know today, the same thing is repeating itself in history. My class, when I graduated from Loma Linda University in 1966 was the last class that was taught anything about hydrotherapy. All the doctors who graduated from Loma Linda since then have never got a class in hydrotherapy. What a shame. Well, hydrotherapy has a way of dramatically increasing the white blood cells in your body so that they can fight infection. It has a unique way of raising the white blood count as many as 4 and 5 times. And that white blood count is vitally important if you're going to fight infection. Well, I don't want to let the evening go without speaking about one of my favorite subjects, and that's sunlight. I enjoy sunlight because many times in the Bible, Jesus is represented by the sun. The sun shall rise with healing in its wings. The S-U-N shall rise with healing in its wings. Does the sun, the S-U-N, have healing in its wings? We'll spend quite a bit of time tomorrow speaking about sunlight, but just tonight I'd like to zero in on the infectious diseases and tell you a little bit about what has happened to sunlight in the past, how that around the turn of the century, Dr. Finsen won the Nobel Prize in medicine for showing that sunlight would cure tuberculosis. And do you know that sunlight became the treatment of choice for treating tuberculosis? In fact, up until the 1930s and early 40s, when they started getting antibiotics and drugs, sunlight was their only recourse for treating infectious diseases. And doctors learned that they could cure strep infections by using sunlight, and staph infections, and many other kinds of bacterial diseases were cured by using the sunlight. In fact, the people became so dependent upon sunlight that these artificial lamps were developed that put out the ultraviolet light, the biologically active part of the sunlight. And these ultraviolet lamps were used by therapists. And these were considered so important that if a child would come down with a strep infection during the middle of the night, the mother would call one of these therapists, and these therapists would come out in the middle of the night to give a sunlight treatment to these children. So vitally important, and that was their only real hope of overcoming these infections, was the use of sunlight. Now, how does sunlight work? We know that it does work, but how does it work? First of all, when the sunlight strikes your skin, and it has to strike your skin, it just can't go through your clothes. But when it strikes your skin, it has an uncanny ability to raise the white blood count in your body. The white blood cells start to increase. And specifically, the kind of white blood cell that really increases is the kind that produces immune serum. Gamma globulin that can help you fight infections. Now, gamma globulin is very interesting because if you've ever come into contact with somebody that's had hepatitis or some other disease, you can go to your doctor and he'll give you a shot of gamma globulin. And this protects your body for a while. Well, now sunlight is doing the same thing. It builds up those white blood cells. And you can see an increase in the white blood cells, plus you can see an increase in the gamma globulin in the bloodstream. You can measure it with laboratory tests following exposure to sunlight. Now, not only does it increase the gamma globulin and the immune serum, but it also increases the ability of those white blood cells that like to eat and engulf the bacteria and destroy them that way. To where, let's say, that they were able to engulf maybe 10 or 12 bacteria. Now they're able to engulf maybe 20 or 25 bacteria. It increases their ability dramatically to destroy those bacteria. Well, there's been some recent exciting things that have been happening in the area of cancer. Because there's a certain substance produced by your white blood cell called interferon that the American Cancer Society has just spent $2 million to purchase so that they could use it in some of their experiments in treating cancer patients. Because do you know that when this substance, this interferon, was given to cancer patients, that some of the most malignant cancers known to man were cured? And this white blood cell, called a lymphocyte, that produces this interferon, is the same white blood cell that is increased dramatically when sunlight strikes your skin. And there is a number of good scientific studies showing that sunlight may be heavily involved in cancer formation. Let me just give you one very brief study tonight. This one researcher found a strain of experimental animals that developed lung cancer very readily. And usually by the time they were 12, 15 months of age, these animals would develop these lung cancers. And this researcher says, aha, sunlight is supposed to be involved in producing skin cancer. I wonder if it'll also accelerate the development of these lung cancers. I wonder if sunlight is not only able to produce cancer in the skin, but it's also able to produce cancer on the inside too, or accelerate the development of cancer. So he took these experimental animals and he gave them just lots of the ultraviolet light. He gave them more than they had ever gotten out of doors. And he started following the incidence of lung cancer. And as the months went by, he started to get a little bit alarmed because he wasn't finding any animals with lung cancer. And he was amazed at the end of the experiment how that the sunlight had protected those animals from lung cancer. And he just couldn't figure it out. He was totally baffled by the end of the experiment. What had happened? And this experiment has been reproduced a number of times with other animals who develop breast cancer and a number of other cancers. And a number of epidemiological studies have been done comparing people who get more sunlight with people who get less. And the incidence of cancer seems to be higher. Now we're talking about internal cancer. Seems to be higher in that group who gets less sunlight. So there is some good information that perhaps those lymphocytes, those white blood cells that raise in the bloodstream, that produce the interferon, are very much involved and can be stimulated when the sunlight strikes your skin. Well, we'll spend a lot more time on sunlight tomorrow, talking about it, and what causes the skin to get cancer when the sunlight strikes your skin. Do you really honestly believe that God would create a sun that would produce great big skin cancers and age his children's skin? Do you really believe that about God, that he would do something like that? Well, I don't. And it's not true. Because when you really look at it and you really investigate it, you find out what the real problem is. And it boils right down to our diets and what we've done. And there's no question in the scientific literature about it. And we'll see where we as Seventh-day Adventists have gotten off the track and are now eating a diet that will produce skin cancer in our bodies if the sunlight strikes our skin. Because, my friends, as surely as if your physical body is not right, you're not in harmony with the laws of God, if you get out into the sun, it's going to be like a refiner's fire. And you better not get out in the sun if your diet is not right. And it's the same thing that can be said about the son of God when he comes. Those who whose lives are not right had better cry for the rocks to fall upon them. So we'll spend more time on that tomorrow, on what there is about our diets that really produces the skin cancer, and how the sun is really one of the most powerful healing agents, as Ellen White puts it. And we'll talk about a number of other areas that sunlight is very vital in healing. Well, briefly, in closing, I'd like to mention deep breathing because this is something that we overlook so often. We say, well, you know, what could deep breathing have to do with my health? And yet, do you know that there's a book written, I have it in my library, called Breathe Deeply and Avoid Colds. And it's written by an ear, nose, and throat surgeon. And he has shown how that he can get his patients through deep and proper breathing to be able to avoid colds And he made a real study of this. In fact, he published a number of scientific papers about it, how just getting more oxygen down into the tissues is vitally important in trying to prevent colds and flus and other infectious diseases. Researchers are finding that deep bone infections, way down deep in your bones, that the antibiotics don't seem to touch. They don't seem to be able to cure osteomyelitis with those antibiotics. And those researchers have discovered that if they can get more oxygen down into those tissues, that a miracle takes place and those bones start to heal. Now, not only is deep and proper breathing vitally important, and we need to learn what the Spirit of Prophecy says is proper breathing. She talks about diaphragmatic breathing, abdominal breathing, and we'll go into that more tomorrow. But I would like to mention that there is two different kinds of air mentioned in the Spirit of Prophecy. There is devitalized air, and there is fresh air. Well, is there any difference? Don't they both contain oxygen? Most assuredly they do, and they may contain equal amounts of oxygen. But there is one vital difference between those two kinds of air. One has been devitalized, and the other is vital air. It's charged air. It's outdoor air. It actually has an electrical charge on it. An actual electrical charge on that outdoor air. And we'll go in tomorrow into some of the aspects of what this charged air can do in your body as far as fighting off infections and as far as fighting off many other diseases. Comparing that with the devitalized air, the air that's been heated or breathed or used in your house. So there is a difference in the kind of air we breathe. And air just isn't air. Air has to be the charged air, the vital air, the outdoor air. In closing, and if you have a question or two, I'll be glad to entertain it before the benediction. But I would like to say that from Councils on Diets and Foods, page 301, there are many ways of practicing the healing art, but there is only one way that heaven approves. God's remedies are the simple agencies of nature. Vital, powerful agencies that sometimes they seem just too simple for us to even pay any attention to. These simple remedies, these true remedies, for Ministry Healing, page 127, pure air, sunlight, abstemiousness or temperance, rest, exercise, proper diet, the use of water, trust in divine power. These are the true remedies. Now, if these natural remedies are the true remedies, what are all the other remedies that we think about? Okay, is there a question or two before we have the benediction? Yes. Okay, the question is about multiple sclerosis. This is a long-term disease. It has acute stages where these people will get paralysis in certain of their limbs or their muscles, and then it'll have what we call a remission, where they'll get better. And do you know that there's almost every kind of a quack treatment in the world for multiple sclerosis? Because these patients many times get better, and for years and years they'll get worse and then they'll get better. They'll get worse and then they'll get better. So you can start any kind of a treatment regimen on these people and they will get better. So we have to be very careful in analyzing this particular type of disease. We have to watch it over a period of many years. But in the experience I've had with it, with my patients, in following them from year to year, when we put them on the natural remedies, and this just doesn't mean the proper natural diet, it means sunlight, the proper kind of air, exercise, hydrotherapy, all of the natural remedies, they all have to be combined. But in watching the patients that I treat for this disease, they seem to have less and less of the acute occurrences of this disease over the years. Well, it can be applied on the spine, but general hydrotherapy is very beneficial for these people. Hot and cold fomentations to the chest, to the abdomen, hot and cold fomentations to the back, hot and cold showers, all different kinds of hydrotherapy is very beneficial to stimulate their circulation, stimulate their immune systems, so they can better fight off this disease. Okay, question in the back. Yes, called a Battle Creek thermophore. I believe that the Battle Creek thermophore can be very effectively used in using as a means of getting heat, and even moist heat, because it seems to have a way of helping you perspire. But it can be effective. We like the old hydrotherapy pads, but they're just not available to everybody in their home, although we try to teach people to make these at home and to use them and steam them in a big kettle. But they are, the Battle Creek thermophore can be used with fairly good results. Yes. Well, let me answer that question by saying that I immunize my own children. My own children don't follow all the rules of health 100%. They're individuals just like I am. We tend to fall and slip. We're not perfect. And the law of God requires perfect obedience. Unfortunately, it's unvariable. It just does not yield. If you don't yield perfect obedience, you are going to reap exactly what you sow. So, because of that, I do immunize my children. I don't do it with a great deal of gusto and zeal. I worry about it a little bit because there are side effects from the immunization. But in the meantime, I'm going to teach my children all of the natural remedies, how to prevent infections and how to overcome them and the lifestyle to live. Okay, I believe there's another question down here. Yes. Okay. Well, this is a very rare genetic type of a disease that you have, if you don't mind me discussing it here in front of the... Okay. I would disagree that the sunlight is the cause for the stroke and things like that that you say. But I won't disagree that the sunlight will do you damage when it strikes your skin because of this genetic problem in your body. Now, there is some information that in certain types of these porphyrias, and I'm not exactly sure just exactly which one you have, but in some of them, that carotene has been shown to be protective of the effects that the sunlight has. In other words, when we take these patients and give them carotene, and do you know where carotene comes from? Carrots and sweet potatoes and dark leafy green vegetables. That this carotene, when given to these patients, it protects them to where these people can get out in the sun. They don't have these effects. Even though they have this... Yes, well, you may not have the one particular type, you know, that we're speaking of, but the types of porphyria that are helped by this, it's dramatic. These people can get out in the sunlight, and they really are beneficial. But you have a very rare disorder. It's not the common thing, and it should be looked into on a individual basis, and it's not something that we should spend a lot of time and discuss in front of the congregation. Okay, was there another question? Yes. You know, I don't really think that Ellen White was real strict about that situation. As for her, she only ate two meals a day. She lived a very sedentary life, although she tried to get out and exercise, but in her later years, she couldn't so much. But she ate two meals a day. Now, I think that there are certain people who, say, are brain workers that maybe have an office job, that two meals would probably be much more preferable for them. There's other active people who carry on with heavy physical work and heavy physical activity that really three meals. But the evening meal should be fairly early in the evening, and it should be light. It should possibly be maybe fruit with a little bread or something like that. And your big meal should be for your breakfast and another good meal for your lunch. And I think that should pretty well get you through the day. Then that little supper in the early evening may be a benefit to you. I think here in America that is true. And the reason why that is true is because we eat so many concentrated calories. We remove so much of the bulk fiber from our food when we eat the sugar and the oil and the refined protein that it's easy to overeat before we even feel full. Yes, well, I can, understand what you're saying. It's a difficult problem in our sinful state to know exactly what is the right thing to do, how much to eat, when to say, this is it, and going beyond that is overdoing it, or whether I should get that third meal a day, and how do you tie the whole family into this thing? These are some very complicated decisions, and they're very personal decisions too. And I think that everyone needs to go into their closet and labor with the Lord about these things and really talk them out and try certain ways and see if it doesn't work for you better or worse, whatever. Everyone's an individual. Some people need three small meals. Some people do better on two large meals. Everyone is an individual, and we have to deal with every case as an individual basis. Well, okay, another question way in the back. Well, it's certainly not a refined food for the bees. I think that honey can be used in the diet, but I think it should be used sparingly. I think that you can overdo it. I know some people, they have honey cookbooks. And all the desserts and goodies they're used to eating with all the sugar in them, all they do is just substitute the honey for that, and they never miss a dessert or a goodie. You know, sometimes with almost every meal. And you can far overdo the honey. I know a number of patients who consume large amounts of honey, and they get into trouble doing it. So I think we can't overdo it. It's a very concentrated sugar, very concentrated sweet. And I think that honey is something that we should use very sparingly and on an occasion to sweeten something with. And I think God was telling us something when He put the stinger on the bee. You know, let's be a little bit careful with the honey. So, yes. Lupus erythematosus? Well, this is a disease that would really get into a lot of understanding tonight. It's what we call a collagen disease or a self-immune disease where your own tissues start to digest themselves and your immune system, the system that should be good, is not functioning good like it should. And all the natural remedies seem to help this immune system come back towards normal. So we need to continually keep thinking about these natural remedies in every disease that we're treating. The natural remedies, the true remedies. Okay, well, one more question before we... Okay, you're very interested in that question, I see. Let me rephrase what I was saying so that we'll get it perfectly clear. The diet is implicated in skin cancer. The sunlight only seems to be an accelerator of this problem. so that the sunlight stimulates. In fact, if I see we do have some blinds on the windows, I'll be glad to show some slides. I brought them along with me of exactly what happens when skin cancer forms and what the mechanism is that sunlight does to stimulate this thing. But the conditions have to be laid down there by the body. In other words, the diet has to be of a certain order in order for the conditions to be right in the tissues for the sunlight to accelerate this problem. And it'd be difficult to explain it unless I had the slides and could go through them with you. And you'll understand it very clearly tomorrow. If you don't, you ask the same question and I'll really dig into it tomorrow afternoon. Okay, it's been a real privilege and a pleasure to be with you this evening. And I will be speaking again tomorrow, I believe, for the church service. And we'll go into the health message and God's remedies, His ways of treating disease, and His plan for developing a treating system and a healing system that will prepare a people to stand in the latter day. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. International copyright, all rights reserved. Free listening of this message and over 7,000 other presentations by more than 100 speakers on 50 different topics is now available on our American Christian Ministries mobile app for Android and Apple devices and on our secure website. You may also order presentations online at AmericanChristianMinistries.org or call 800-233-4450. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help to prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.